This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Nothing is so conducive to deep conversation as a dining room table surrounded by interesting people, especially if you've cooked the meal. After completing 30 books and hundreds of magazine articles and short stories, at 55, Rick Bass wanted to reconnect to the people who were his heroes. The Mechanism was a series of what he calls ceremonial dinners. Bass called the people he admired and invited himself to their homes. Along with one or two of the young writers he was mentoring, he brought the food and cooked it. Then they talked about writing, about editing, about being edited, about nature, the environment, food, and life. We are joined now by the author of the book that emerged from this intergenerational project, Traveling Feast, On the Road and at the Table with My Heroes, by Rick Bass, who is with us today. He lives in Montana, but is coming to NKU next Wednesday, August the 22nd, at noon in the Otto M. Buttick Theater. He is joined today by the president of Adventure Keen, Richard Hunt. Adventure Keen specializes in publishing nonfiction titles for outdoor activities and regional orientation. Author and Lakeside Park resident Ron Ellis. Mr. Ellis is currently completing conversations with Rick Bass for the University Press of Mississippi. And the chef and owner of Peas and Carrots Culinary Consulting, Joanna Drilling, Peas and Carrots, that's like that, to join the conversation, please call us at 513-419-7100, or you can email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome, everybody, to Cincinnati Edition. It's great to have you here. And
great being here, Dan. Thank you.
And Rick, let's start with you. This is we're sort of playing off of your book. Was smuggling elk meat past the TSA and the British customs on your way to the home of David Sedaris the craziest or most fun thing that you did on this whole adventure?
Yes. I have a question for you, Dan. Thanks for having me on. Are Joanne and Richard and Ron all there with you right now?
They are. They're in the studio. You're in Montana.
Yeah, man, I miss all the good stuff.
Well, I'm not sure. We may be missing a little view from out your window there. So,
but you're missing some smoke on the horizon. There's a lot of fire popping around up here right now. It's that time of year.
Oh, you're seeing that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's too bad. Okay. Rick, there's a passage very early in the book, which we're talking about writing, and you wanted to talk about writing. I suspect everybody here is a writer. It says, and I'm quoting, "When you are shy like this, you feel a million miles away from anything. You want to come closer, but cannot bear to bring yourself in. When you're a million miles out, though you can see things, and you're free just to stand there and watch, the things that are sometimes ordinary to everyone else seem to your shy mind, in the last outpost, beautiful. You feel like falling over on your back, upturned like a turtle." Being shy, what's the advantage to that if you're a writer?
Well, I hate to digress here. It's a long answer, but I think it's, you know, I don't mean to say it's right or wrong or the way to be a writer or not to be a writer. It's just what works for me and how I operate. When you're conditioned and accustomed to staying on the outside, you know, on the perimeter of really anything, you have a wider angle, wider view, wider point of view. And then when you find your path and route to go into the subject, you know, you take it, you go, but you spend a little extra time investing in listening and looking and watching and absorbing all the five senses about the subject and the situation. And, you know, it's kind of like being a backseat driver. You know, you can see more.
Ron Ellis, given that you're writing a book about Rick Bass at the moment, what did you learn from Traveling Feast that surprised you or gave you some sort of new insight?
I was surprised at just how many fabulous writers Rick has had as mentors, whether at a distance or close up as editors, or just reading their work and how it shaped his life. He himself is a tremendous writer, and I've, of course, been a mentee to Rick through the University of Montana Environmental Writing Institute back in 1998, the early pages of my first book.
He didn't take you along on this trip.
He didn't, but he has taken me on many trips through his books. He's been a great guide and counselor to me. I would say that I don't know. I know Rick pretty well. I think the book was everything I expected to hear. He's a very gracious, decent guy who does gives everything to everybody. He's a great teacher, and I wasn't really surprised by anything, really. Okay. And we've had a lot of conversations, to be honest, and so I knew some of the things that were forthcoming.
So that point about being shy,
yes, sir,
jumped off the page to me. If you had to pick out something, a quality about Rick Bass, what would you sort of zone in on?
I guess his absolute passion and commitment to wild places. Mm-hmm. I met him in Cincinnati for the first time, actually. Drew at Drew's Bookshop is the one who took me to the shelf and said, after being a customer there for a month, this is the man you need to be reading. And she pulled off his first book, The Deer Pasture. So I began to read that and began to see this passion that he has for wild places. And his first signing, he was here. I remember he had postcards. He lives in the Yaak Valley up near the Canadian border in northern Montana. And he had postcards that said, don't hack the yak, because there were so much timber cutting taking place there. He's fully committed to his place, to his profession, and to wild places, and to the importance of nature in writing and in every way in our lives.
Well, Joanne Drilling, you are a you've written about food.
I have.
You are a cook yourself. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is about food. It's not a cookbook.
Right.
We're not talking about, but it's sort of how Rick Bass structured various menus based on who he was having dinner with that night and what he was trying to accomplish. What struck you about the food portion of this?
I think overwhelmingly that he cooked from the heart, and that what he brought to the different dinners that he prepared were things that were very integral to who he is as a person. And so a lot of the wild game, because he is a hunter, he brought that. And that's very different than going to the store and picking up a chicken. You know, that's something where he spent the time to, you know, to pursue that animal, to harvest that animal, and then to, you know, to pack it up and, you know, bring it on ice all the way, you know, across the country, sometimes across the world. I mean, that's...
And
that
ice,
in and of itself,
and
is
by the
phenomenal.
Way, ice melts.
It does.
In backpacks.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, and so many of the other dishes, you know, there were a lot of wild mushrooms used, dried morels, things like that. Ingredients that weren't just something that you picked up at the corner store. Things that were really connected to nature, connected to the earth, but also connected to the people who did the cooking.
In fact, David or Rick, when you were preparing for the dinner with David Sedaris, and you went into the butcher store in England and had to buy, had to figure out what you were going to buy, but had to buy something that you had not killed yourself. You really were having problems.
Everything was naked. It was awful. Yeah, no, I never saw such pale-looking poultry in my life. It was a real, it was like we hadn't slept in 36 hours, but when we looked at that, the offerings in that butcher shop, you know, these domestic chickens and pigeons and pheasants and stuff. It was like, it just wanted to gag. Like, wait, you see what we have in the pack? Well, wait, what we brought for you? And Joanne, we should do a sequel, Peas and Carrots and Elk.
Okay, sounds good.
I like it.
Does elk go with everything?
It really does.
I mean, that's what I thought. Richard Hunt, woven into this narrative of the traveling feast are descriptions of all sorts of places. The Yaak Valley in Montana, New York Central Park, the English countryside, all of that, France, it's all there. So obviously Rick Bass brings his background as a writer about in the environment and nature with him into this book, and what sort of came through to you?
Well, I think any time that a writer is able to channel their wanderlust and share it with readers, you know, to have an author of this stature who's got 33 books, you do get to not only go kind of around the world, but you get to go really deep with a lot of his subjects. And you love, even as an armchair traveler, to be able to learn alongside their journey.
You know, Joanne was saying, to interrupt, but he cooks from the heart. Well, that's where he writes from as well. That's the country that comes forth out of his pen onto the page. And you feel that in everything that he writes, and that he's connected deeply to it, and that he's you trust him. He's a trustworthy guide in his writing, very much so.
Trustworthy guide. That's interesting. Rick, you were clearly at a very vulnerable point when you wrote this book. I mean, it constantly comes through in different ways. You were dealing with your divorce, dealing with sort of your aging. Have those been resolved a bit for you in the years since between taking on this project and actually getting this book out and then moving on to other projects?
Well, that's a good and honest question. You know, at what point does grief become something other than grief? I'm not sure. I think you used a good word choice there, resolved. It's not like fixed or repaired or, you know, but I think resolved might be the right verb. English language, I think, has some limitations, and this may be one of them, but I don't.
Okay.
I don't know what the verb is there as far as you know, the change in that relationship. You know, as far as my relationship to writing, it definitely, you know, made a turn, and it's been matured and both reinvigorated by that turn, which is not usually two words that you think of together. Energized and matured. Feels good. I went into the project thinking, you know, man, I've written 30 books. What if I write 40 before I'm done? That's a lot of books. Do we really need one more book? What's the difference between 40 and 41? And when I get to be old, how do I want to be? Do I want to, I think I kind of want to, I spend a lot of time at the desk and table. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in the woods, but not enough. And every hour spent at the table is an hour you're not spent fishing or hunting or hiking or playing with your kids. So I went into the project thinking, I want affirmation on, okay, do your best to step away. And I kept being puzzled by why my mentors, why my heroes were just working like hired labor for, you know, at this craft, you know, late into the game when, it would be okay for them to go out on the porch and sit in the sun and have a cocktail at 4 in the afternoon if they didn't want to wait till 5 and that kind of stuff. And visiting them, witnessing their commitment, I realized this is what brings them joy, is not so-called success or absence of success, you know, in the marketplace, but just the daily journey of wrestling with words and images, and I've crossed through that bottleneck myself, and I've drunk the Kool-Aid. It is what I love to do.
Well, I'm not sure who to direct this at. Maybe Richard Hunt, but in order to be a writer about the environment, maybe a writer about conservation, do you need to be an outdoors person? Do you need to be a hunter? What is it that you need to be to really feel it?
Well, to some regards, I think that shy quality comes forward again. You got to be out there, but then you have to be able to stop and listen and see, you know, and engage all five senses around you and try to put words to things that maybe nature was not worried about putting words to in the first time. I think to some element, if you engage in those pursuits, whether it be hunting, there's a different aspect, that a more visceral way that comes up to it. But I also know folks who write very deeply about it who you might call a pacifist, you know, and they just appreciate it from a different perspective.
Ron, what do you think about that?
I think so. I think whether it's wild places well beyond your front door or whether you pop into the nice quiet corner in the back of your garden in the house and watch a hummingbird come in and see the birds come around. And in our neck of the woods now, we have the new wild. We have deer in every yard. We have a family of red fox in where I live, and we see hawks of all nature and species. And so, yeah, I think it's and nature's a very healing thing. I can certainly speak to that at this point. It's valuable. It has great power, whether it's deep in a wild forest or whether it's in your backyard in a comfortable place watching everything around and realizing that we're all part of that.
Joanna, with all of the focus on eating local, really taking seriously your environment, mm-hmm. How does all of that sort of interface with some of what this book was dealing with? And is this part of that sort of sometimes urban movement of people who maybe aren't getting out in nature, but they want to eat local? They maybe want to eat things that aren't just totally predictable and available at the local supermarket?
Sure. I definitely think so. And I think it ties back a little bit to, you know, what you used at the beginning and that Richard referenced as well about being shy, is that, you know, thinking about where your food comes, and it's just, I mean, it's thinking. You're thinking about it. You're not just grabbing what's closest and sticking it in your face. You know what I mean? You're thinking about, why am I choosing to eat this? You know, where is this coming from? How was this animal raised? Or where was this food grown? How were the people who harvested this food, how were they treated? You know, and I think it's just a different level of consciousness, of being aware of how the choices that we make, whether it's, you know, what we eat or what we buy, that how those affect ourselves, how it affects us, but also how it affects the community in a broader sense.
You know, as someone who is interested in meals, mm-hmm. menus, maybe bringing people together, one of the things, and I'm rather than ask Rick Bass about this first, I'll ask you. One of the things he said is what he thinks he was hungriest for in this whole grand experiment was building community. How do you see that and eating together, cooking together, being connected?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think if you look at people who like to cook, it's, you know, cooking isn't just making a sandwich for somebody. I mean, it can be, but cooking is about taking care of people. You know, it's about how you nurture your family, how you nurture your friends. I mean, you know, oftentimes when friends come to visit, you know, they say, oh, we'll go out. We don't want you to cook. But I love to cook. You know, I love to cook, but I also love to sit at my table and look around and see all my friends there eating and laughing and drinking. And so I think that, you know, cooking, it's hard not to build community with cooking.
Rick, how successful were you in building community in this whole process, not only for yourself, but for your mentees that you took along on certain trips, and also your youngest daughter you took along?
I think, you know, beyond my wildest hopes, we helped create community. I still hear, you know, from writers, I say, you know, what's Lowry up to? What's Aaron up to? What's Molly up to? What's Christina? What's Skip doing? And that was my goal, to bridge the generation beyond me with the generation behind me. And as Joanne says, when you're all at the table laughing and drinking and talking, it's family. It's not politics. It's not rhetoric. It's just caring and thinking who wants what. It is the shyness aspect is really being well addressed here by everybody. It's like it's almost maybe a better word than shyness is humility, where you step back and look and try and take care of everybody else rather than just yourself. And it's it's a really it's a great gift to be put in that position or to put oneself in that position. It's very, very gratifying and very community building. You know, what Richard said about the five senses. You know, when you are sitting there quietly observing, you have a better shot of engaging all those five senses, and that's what makes art great. Art is selectivity. You know, what to put in, what to leave out. That's what makes Ron's book so lovely. I mean, it's one sustained presence with the five senses, with and community of his family. Often out in the woods, most often out in the woods, where there's space and time to let those five senses enter the observer, the writer, and subsequently the reader at their own pace. And I hadn't really thought about how much hunting is like cooking, but you're gathering something to give to somebody.
And the same generosity that Rick has in his book, he's given to us here in Cincinnati when he comes next week. And most of the time an author comes into town, does one event, and kind of beats it out of there. But he's going to come in on Wednesday during the day, talk to NKU students about activism and environmentalism. That's going to be at noon up there. That evening, he's going to be at the Metropolitan Club talking to a whole different group of people. And the menu that Joanne helped fashion for that evening picks up on some of that the natural food and the local food. And then the final evening on Thursday, we're going to have Roebling Point Books. And so that will be a more traditional signing. But again, Rick will be building that community while he's here in a very different way.
Well, the traveling feast continues and comes to Cincinnati. Thank you to all of my guests this afternoon. Rick Bass, thank you for joining us from Montana. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Segment producer is Layla Shukui. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.